feet and daylight unto my path. And a light unto, a light unto my path, my path.
Welcome to Searchlight, a survey through Scripture with Pastor John Corson. It is our desire to bring you a systematic study of the entire Bible, chapter by chapter, book by book. In our study through 1 Samuel, we have been following the struggle of David as he is being pursued by King Saul. Because of jealousy, the unrighteous Saul is trying to kill the righteous David. After a long time, David finally just decides to go over to the enemy territory, where he assumes that he will be safe. As Pastor John taught us, this is always a mistake, and we sometimes do the same thing. Sometimes we just get weary of the battles that we are fighting and think that we can find rest and relief in going into the world. We may find rest for a little while, but then big problems come our way. As we continue our story today in 1 Samuel chapter 28, this is exactly what is happening to David. He has enjoyed relative peace for about 16 months, but now he is going to be in big trouble. Let's now join Pastor John as we learn from David's mistakes.
Well, it came to pass in those days that the Philistines gathered their armies together for warfare to fight with Israel. And Achish said to David, "Know thou assuredly that thou shalt go with me to battle, you and your men." And David said to Achish, "Surely you know what I can do. You know that I'm a can-do kind of guy." And Achish said to David, "I'm going to make you keeper of my head. You're going to be the head hog, the head dog. You're going to be the keeper of my head, my personal bodyguard. I've been watching you, David, and I know what you can do. And you've been out there battling your own people. I trust you." Achish is saying, "Now, we're going to go war. I'm going to get the Philistine army mobilized, and I want you and your guys to join us. And we're going to go kill some Israelites. What do you say? And you're going to be right beside me." Uh-oh, David, were you counting on this when you backslid? Were you counting on this when you cut yourself off from your people, when you went into Philistine country, when you backed off, when you backed away? Is this where you thought you would be, David? Oh, the pressure was off, wasn't it, David? Saul didn't chase you anymore when you were in Philistine country. But there's a bigger problem. Now you are going to have to be Judas Iscariot, and you're going to have to come against the people of God. There's a price to pay for your 16-month vacation in pleasure land, buddy. There's always a price to pay. Every temptation that the devil sends my way, every temptation the devil sends your way is always packaged as a present. It's gift wrapped. It's beautiful. Oh, how wonderful. This is great. We're going to cruise. Here's your own city, Ziklag. You'll be safe there. Saul's not after you anymore. And then 16 months later, the bill comes in. "Come on, David, let's go kill Israelites. What do you say?" And David here says, you know what I can do. You know how talented I am. That's right. That's why you're going to be right beside me. You're going to be right here with me, right there in the battle, David. I'm counting on you to do some heavy-duty damage, you see. Well, David's stuck. The plot thickens. Now, while the Philistines are mobilizing for war, something interesting happens. Samuel, the prophet, verse 3, was dead. All Israel had lamented him and buried him at Ramah in his own city. Saul had put away, King Saul had dealt with those that had familiar spirits or those that were involved in witchcraft, necromancy, fortune telling, all those kinds of demonic activities. He put out those with familiar spirits and the wizards and all the rest out of the land, all the psychics, you see. The Philistines now gathered themselves together and came and pitched in Shunem. And Saul, he gathered all of Israel together and they pitched in Gilboa. Now for you Bible guys, this is interesting. David is down south, you see, in Ziklag. He's reporting to Achish, the king of Gath, also in the southern part of the country. And now there's going to be a war between the Philistines and Saul and the Israelites. But it's up, way up north, Mount Gilboa. Now, if you've been to Israel, you know the layout of the land. Mount Gilboa is just south of the Sea of Galilee. This means that the Philistines had really penetrated Israel to the max. They were in control, and Saul is boxed in. Saul is way up north. The Philistines have been making real inroads, and now they're forcing Saul into this final battle there at Mount Gilboa, way up north. So Saul is freaked out. Saul realizes the Philistines have really taken control. Saul's in trouble. So he gets his boys together, and they're way up north in Gilboa, way far away from where Saul would want to be. They're up north in a corner, Mount Gilboa, you see. And Saul, verse 5, he sees the army of the Philistines and he was afraid and his heart trembled greatly. Now think with me. Saul is boxed in. The Philistines are dominating the land. He's freaked out. Why? How could this happen? Now listen to me. How could this happen? Saul, how did you lose control of the land of Israel? How did you lose control of the situation militarily? Well, there's a very simple reason. He was spending his time fighting the wrong enemy. He was chasing David down. He was consumed with getting David. He was determined to get David. He was envious of David, threatened by David, critical of David. Listen to me. He was fighting the wrong enemy all these months and years. And so now there's a real war to fight, and he is completely, totally unprepared. If I fight the wrong enemy, these little picayune-ish little problems that crop up amongst Christians, see, if I get all tangled up in, well, this person's feelings are hurt and that person doesn't feel used and this person is mad because we have white candles instead of brown and everything else. If I spend my time fighting those battles, getting upset with or getting involved in little skirmishes within the Christian community, listen to me, when that happens, when the real war comes, I'm going to be completely, totally, absolutely unprepared. Because I've been fighting the wrong battle. I've been engaged in the wrong conflict. Saul, why are you chasing your brother, David, your countryman, David? What are you? Even David asked that question. Why are you after me, Saul? But Saul was obsessed, and that can happen to you. It can happen to me. It can happen to us. We become critical of other Christians, churches, ministries, people, family, whatever it might be. And we're fighting the wrong battle. And what happens is when the real deal comes, when there's a real war against the forces of hell, the kingdom of damnation and death and darkness, we're unprepared. We don't know what to do. We're in a weakened condition or what have you. Saul, this is why you shouldn't have been chasing David down, because you lost control of the land. And now you're in big trouble. And ultimately, as we shall see, not this week, but next week, Saul dies in this battle. What a sad, unnecessary, dumb thing, militarily, strategically. He fought the wrong, he fought against his own countrymen. He fought against another Christian, if you would, if I can use the analogy. Wrong battle, Saul. And now he's there. He's afraid. He's outnumbered. He's boxed in. So he inquires of the Lord, verse 6 tells us. He inquires of the Lord, and the Lord answered him not. Neither by dreams, God does speak in dreams and through dreams. So if you're sleeping right now, that's okay. I hope God is talking to you. Nor by the Urim. Remember the Urim? The Urim and Thummim, lights and perfections. The high priest wore the breastplate, and evidently the stones, the 12 stones on the breastplate would light up when they were pursuing the Lord, seeking God for instructions or directions. And the lights that would shine through these stones would spell out certain key words that would give them direction for battle or national matters that were of significance or importance. And so Saul had no dreams. God wasn't speaking to him. He went to the priest, and there was no communication coming from the Urim and the Thummim. Nothing was happening. Nor the prophets. No word of prophecy was coming his way. And Samuel, the guy that he could count on, was now dead, as we read previously. Saul's in for the battle of his life. He's freaked out. And God's not talking to him. Not in dreams, not through the high priest, not via prophets, you see. Then Saul said, he says in verse 7, he says to his servants, "Seek me a woman." Now, if you ever want to know what God thinks about you guys, just a woman, your wife will tell you, believe me, or a woman will let you know. "Seek me a woman," but not just any woman. He says, "Seek me, go find a woman. I got to know what to do. I don't know how to approach this battle. I need direction. I need instruction. And God's not speaking to me. So go find a woman that hath a familiar spirit, that I may go to her, inquire of her." Go find Miss Cleo. Find her. Dial her up. So his servant says, "Well, there is a woman that has a familiar spirit at Endor. She's this witch, she's this necromancer, she's this fortune teller, this psychic." You see, by the way, a few months ago, there was a story on the ABC News that cracked me up. I shared it on the radio, but it was National Psychics Week. And so one of the reporters, Jack Buck, called up 15 psychics and says, "Well, now, what do you think about the week we're having?" And out of the 15 he called, 14 of the psychics didn't know it was National Psychics Week, which I thought was interesting because they're supposed to know, you know. "I didn't know it was National Psychics Week," they said, but be that as it may, go and find somebody who's psychic. "And I need help. I need to know what to do." So Saul disguised himself, verse 8, and put on other raiment or clothing. He went, two men with him, and they came to the woman by night. Oh, it's a dark, dark, dark time for Saul indeed. By disguising himself, he's really revealing who he is. When you put on disguises, when you sneak around, when you seek to be tricky, it's not a disguise. It's actually a revelation of who you are, who I am, who we are really. Now, Saul had ordered the extermination of the witches and wizards and fortune tellers and all the rest, but you see, his heart was still inclined towards that. And now he says, "Find me one of these witches, a woman with a demonic spirit that can tell me what to do." So they went out, and Saul disguises himself in that way. And they came to the lady by night, and he said, "I pray thee, divine unto me by the familiar spirit, and bring me him up whom I shall name unto thee." I want you to go into the unseen world and call up from the dead a man that I'll tell you his name. The woman said, verse 9, "You know what Saul the king has done. He has cut off those that have familiar spirits or demonic powers, and the wizards and all the rest out of the land. Wherefore then layest thou a snare for my life to cause I'll die? If Saul hears about this, I'll die." She doesn't recognize Saul yet. He's disguised. "If Saul finds out, I'm dead, you see." And Saul, verse 10, swore to her by the Lord, saying, "As the Lord lives, there shall no punishment happen to thee for this thing." I promise you, you're not going to get in trouble. I guarantee, Saul said. Well, the lady said in verse 11, "Whom shall I bring up? Who do you want to talk to?" And he said, "Bring me up Samuel." Well, the woman does her thing, has her tarot cards or her shark's teeth or whatever it might be. She does her thing. And the woman then saw Samuel and cried with a loud voice. And the woman spake to Saul, saying, "Why hast thou deceived me? You are Saul." Now, this idea of crying with a loud voice, she was freaked out. She was upset. She was in shock because it worked. See, she knew that this was the real deal. See, these people with familiar spirits, whether in Saul's time or in our day, keep in mind that a lot of tarot card readers and fortune tellers and occultic activity is based on familiar spirits, demons, who are familiar through observation with certain things about people, like you or me. Satan has an army of demons. He can dispatch these demons as he wishes. Those demons, they don't know what's going on in your mind, but they can watch what you do. And those demon spirits can make observations about me and observations about you. And then when you talk to a witch, a person who is in the area, the realm of the demonic, people say, "Well, yeah, but he told me, this guy, this psychic or Miss Cleo or whatever it might be, they told me stuff that nobody else could know, stuff about my childhood that nobody here in Oregon knows or whatever. So, hey, it must be real." Well, it could be that the reason that they know what they know is because a demon has seen you in certain situations or seen me in certain places, and the demon can then speak to the person who has this familiar spirit, you see. But the person who's in this state knows that it's counterfeit, although it is spiritual, knows that it's not authentic in the sense of divine and heavenly. And that's why she freaks out, because she realizes, wait a minute, this isn't a spirit impersonating Samuel, or this isn't a demon trying to tell me information that I might let you, Saul, think that I'm talking to Samuel. This is Samuel. And she is freaked out, and she is terrorized, and she is upset, because it worked. Samuel really did come back from the dead, and she is freaked out, and she is upset, and she can't believe it. It worked. This really is Samuel, back from the dead. Wow. Saul, how low are you going to go? Saul, God's not speaking to you. And instead of repenting before him and confessing your need of him and turning away from your sin, you're going to a psychic. And it's not innocent, because in that world you are opening doors that allow demons to flood in, deceptions to take place. That is why the Bible says specifically that we are to have nothing to do whatsoever with necromancy, that is, talking to the dead, or witchcraft, or fortune telling, or wizardry. God said a witch is not to be allowed life in my land. That here, Saul, now he's in the place where he's face to face with Samuel. And what does Samuel say? Find out in our study next week. A couple of closing thoughts before we go our way. You need to tell your kids, your teenagers, and your junior hires, and your elementary school kids, you need to take them to this story. You need to show them that it's not innocent to play with Ouija boards or to go to fortune tellers or to call psychics or whatever it might be, that you are opening up a world that is very dark and very deadly. It's not to be messed around with. We're not to be interested in it or intrigued by it, but we're to run from it. And if any of you happen to have Ouija boards or tarot cards or what have you in your homes, I would highly encourage you to, the first thing you do when you get home is take that out into the garbage or put it in the fireplace. Get rid of that stuff, anything like it. Oh, but it's a souvenir from Hong Kong. Let me encourage you. Let me encourage you. Don't have that stuff. I would never have any of that stuff in my house, around my family. I don't care where it came from. It is not to be. This stuff is dangerous. It's demonic. Be careful. Be wise and make sure your kids understand. Teach them and demand those kids that are under your roof and living in your home that there's absolutely no place for that stuff at all, ever, for any reason whatsoever, you see. And I would encourage you to take hope tonight, because you see, you might say, man, I'm so aware of this tendency in my life that seems to be an Achilles heel, that seems to be a point of vulnerability, that seems to be a weakness. God can still use you. God uses flawed men like David, like you, like me. Don't let Satan say, well, you know, you have a problem with this, or you struggle with that, or you don't seem to have the other conquered completely, so forget about serving. Forget about being used. You're not going to be blessed. The Bible knows nothing of that. If you have a heart for the Lord and you're in love with the Lord, hey, that's what He wants to see. Love covers a multitude of sin, you see. Love. If you love God, if you're thankful that the Lord has sent His Son to die for you, that He's got your name written in the book of life and you're going to heaven when this life is through, if you're glad about that and if you're appreciative of what He's done for you, then just expect Him to bless you and use you. Oh, great, then I'll just keep lying. Well, if you want to. If you want to see blood flow and heads roll and misery like David in his story, well, then you're really dumb. But you see, I realize, Lord, sin brings about its own sickening repercussion. I don't want to go there. I don't want to do that. But even if I'm struggling with something, Lord, I know that if my heart's towards You, that You use flawed people. You have to. There's nobody else to use, quite frankly, you see. See. Take hope. Take heart. Just expect the Lord to use you if you have a heart for Him. And please remember this. If you're fighting against a Christian, anybody in this room that you're mad at, ticked off at, stop that. You're fighting the wrong battle. I promise you this. And there's going to be a battle that's real that comes your way. And guess what? You're going to be impotent, powerless, because you spent all your energy fighting the wrong people. Boy, what a tragedy. Don't do that. Saul was an idiot. He said, I have played the fool, by his own admission. He was fighting the wrong battle. Be wise.
A good word for us. We need to be wise about what we are doing. We need to be wise about fighting the right battle. We need to be wise about avoiding the things of the demonic world. We need to be wise about staying away from enemy territory. You'll be glad you did.
This teaching is also available on the Searchlight website at johncorson.com. You will also find on the website Pastor John's books and other Bible study resources. Again, the address of the website is johncorson.com.
We are all on a journey in this life. If you are a believer in God, your journey is taking you to heaven. To help us keep our eyes on our destination, we have a book available called A Place for You, Reflections on Heaven. This book, taken from sermons that John has given, focuses on the hope of heaven. Heaven is a real place, and it is not that far away. This book is for everyone who longs for that day when we will be in heaven with our Savior. You may order A Place for You from our website at johncorson.com.
Searchlight is a listener-supported ministry. We appreciate your prayers and support. May the Lord richly bless you.